Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Everybody, welcome to the Ann and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me today is James Beckett. Jackie is out. She's taken like a small hiatus. She plans to come back maybe when we do the Attack on Titan portion, but she's just like super busy. She's got a lot going on, a lot of stuff that she's been up to. So she decided to step out for a little bit. We might bring in a third host, but I haven't made any moves on that yet. I have to find my next podcast victim and convince them
is that to what do we're this called show. For the victims?
Yeah, you guys are all just, people that I've convinced to be on this. But today we've got a lot of news and we've got a lot of anime to talk about. We're going to be talking about Blue Period, which is streaming on Netflix. It's one of their first weekly streaming anime shows about art school. Something I can deeply relate to as an art school reject. So look forward to that.
I'm just glad Netflix jail is seemingly dead, or at least dying.
Yeah.
No more Netflix jail, please.
Please. Also, speaking of Netflix, I think right now they've got a stream going on just about their anime. So if you're watching that instead of this, well, check out the audio version. It'll be up tomorrow on Anime News Network. But I'm expecting some JoJo news to be on there. If you manage to avoid the Stone Ocean leaks, good for you. I did not. They were not that in-depth, really. The story is some kid, his dad works at Netflix, kind of like my uncle works at Nintendo, so I mean, I'm a little suspect on that. But he got into his dad's account and uploaded a video showing, like, the 12 episodes and just, like, scrolling through it. So, like, there wasn't a lot revealed. I think that there's some other tidbits floating around, like what the actual ending song is and things like that. But I don't want to spoil that for everybody. That's usually some of the fun, is finding out what song they've licensed for the ending theme of the new series. So I'll keep that to myself. I might not even be right anyway. So I would hate to give you guys the wrong information on that. But yeah, that's going on right now. But for us, we're talking about Blue Period. We're going to talk about the latest episode of Rankings of Kings. I think that's going to go on every week because I love that show.
I will take any opportunity on this earth to sing the praises of my sweetest, goodest boy. So
Man, he got himself into quite a situation this week. So we'll be talking about that.
Words.
There'll be spoilers. So this is your early warning. I'll say it again before we start, but there'll be spoilers for Rankings of Kings and spoilers for Demon Slayer, although none as big as the first time we brought it up. Don't go back and listen to that episode if you haven't seen Mugen Train, because we're still in the midst of Mugen Train. So if you haven't watched the movie, we won't do any spoilers, even though technically everyone has known how that arc ends for like 6 months. But that's okay. We're considerate here at Anime.
Lindsay. I didn't know how it ended.
I felt so bad for you that got spoiled for you. So we're gonna try to not do that. So the first thing we're going to do, it'll be muted so we don't get a copyright strike or anything. We're going to show the trailer for the Jujutsu Kaisen Zero movie that's coming out on New Year's Eve. James, have you already watched this?
The trailer? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched it again.
It went live really early in the morning for me, Pacific time. So it was really, really late at night in Japan. I think it was like midnight. And there was still about... God, I don't want to get the number wrong. If you go read the article on Anime News Network, you can get the exact number. But during the premiere, there was, I think, around 70,000 people watching it live. So people went crazy for this. So we're going to watch it real quick and share some thoughts. So this is, again, animated by MAPPA, who did the original television series. Already looks really good. If you don't know anything about... Okay, can we check the guy's nipples in the back, though? Was I the only one who noticed that?
Does he have nips?
They're not the usual shape, but they're definitely, I'll go back after we watch the whole thing.
So is that going to be the new, they started with the weird shaped irises and now they're going to do weird shaped nipples. Is that the new thing?
Yeah, that's the only way that, the only thing left to go is, but it looks like, a lot of the characters, although she's got different glasses in this, this is a prequel. A lot of the characters are coming back, except of course, the main character, because this is focusing on a different guy named Yuta. Apparently he got child married to Rika.
As you do. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the whole deal with this prequel, wasn't this basically like the pilot?
Yeah. For the manga. So this was like the original pilot, and then he reworked it when it got serialized in Shonen Jump. And I think that's a great way to actually approach a Shonen Jump movie.
Yeah.
Same world, but just completely different protagonist. But yeah, it looks really, really good. I'm real excited about this.
Yes.
So the plot is that
I'm just ready for more of that world and that universe and that whole kind of grungy aesthetic. I love it. I love every bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. Oh God. YouTube automatically took me to the Netflix Festival Japan stream right after that. They're like, hey, don't you want to watch this? Yeah, I do. But I've got something to do right now, guys. Chill out.
We'll watch it later. That's what YouTube is for.
Exactly. I'm not required. This isn't going to go away. It'll be up for, you know, as long as they leave it there. But yeah, the plot of the movie, we've got Yuta, and he's supposed to be sort of this nervous high school kid, and his childhood friend Rika has been turned into a curse and won't leave him alone. And she's like an advanced curse, you know, maybe got more serious powers than your typical curse. So Satoru Gojo, as he does, finds him and starts teaching him how to combat curses. So self-contained story, I'm assuming, but I thought the panda looked really good in that.
Yeah, panda is, I really love it if we get to, I guess, spoilers, kind of, for the anime. But panda has more than one form, I guess. And I thought his form looked pretty cool in the show, but I could tell that, like, that was maybe the part of the production that was getting just a little rushed. And I'm excited to see what Panda's going to get up to with that movie theater money.
Yeah, yeah. So have you read the manga? I think it's actually on the Shonen Jump app. I haven't, but I was curious.
For Zero specifically?
Yeah, Zero specifically.
No. The minute that the movie got announced, I wanted to, if ever I know that I'm going to watch like the anime or the movie adaptation, I usually try to avoid reading the source material just because I want to try to approach it fresh. Not all the time. Like I read Beastars like twice before the anime came out, but.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet either. I've been debating whether to just pick it up or not, but yeah, that's looking good. Comes out Christmas Eve. I don't think there's been distribution dates announced for like North America yet, but they've been pretty good about getting those within a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, we don't have to wait like 3 years anymore like we used to. Gosh, I still remember the wait for, was it Evangelion 3.3? It took like 3 years to get on Blu-ray here.
That was Kara's fault. Kara, don't listen to this, but that was, I know, it's totally your fault. Yeah.
I don't think they deny it. I think they'd be like, yeah, we did that.
They'd be like, yeah, we wanted to make sure we got it out right. I'm like, okay.
That's fine.
That's fine, I guess. The second part I wanted to talk about news is that there was a development that is tangentially related to Demon Slayer. We've talked about it on here before that UFO Table got in some legal trouble because the president, Hikaru Kondo, was not paying their taxes. In fact, they kept about 138 million yen or 1.25 million US dollars. That's how much they owed in taxes. Between 2015 and 2018, in order to like buffer in case stuff took a downturn or anything, they hid about 441 million yen, which is about US $4 million. So they just didn't claim that income. And then the taxes on the income, I guess, would be roughly 1.25 million. So
shit, I want to do that. I want to just hide $10,000 in my socks, just a rainy day fund. Guys, I'm also doing an anime studio, I promise.
Yeah, most of this money came out of their cafes, I think, too, which was the thing that was like additional income that they weren't claiming from the UFO Table cafes, which sells merchandise and things like that, as well as has a rotating menu.
I'm guessing you have a lot of like sabers that are serving you waffles.
Probably a lot of fate related stuff.
Yeah.
So Hikaru Kondo admitted to it. And I kind of expected him, because this is a white collar crime. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of money. American businessmen get away with a lot more. So I assumed, you know, okay, he was going to get like heavily fined or something like that. Prosecution is actually seeking jail time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For 20 months. So if,
all right,
unless they like,
I guess they didn't like murder anyone.
I don't know what that would mean for the studio as a whole, as far as how like things will get passed down, who would be controlling things while he's in jail, if he goes to jail. They could strike some kind of deal, but I don't know why they would if he already pled guilty. Like usually when there's so that much happens,
of it. Well, I was gonna say, I know that also too, there's a whole culture of like, if you're kind of serving as the face of the company and the scandal's already there, you're like kind of expected to kind of bear the brunt of the public shame, or, you know, you always see those big like apology tours that people go on. And I kind of imagine that the jail time is almost being treated more like that. Like it's like the most extreme apology tour you can do.
No kidding. Yeah. And this might just be me. I felt sorry for this guy for a while. I don't know why. Like most of the time, like white collar tax evasion type stuff, it's like, no, it's crappy. Pay your taxes. You know, everyone needs it. And I do, but I think it, part of my feelings are informed by how animation studios are typically, and the animators there are really, really underpaid. Yeah. And the idea that he was saving this money so he'd be able to continue to like maybe pay his employees in case work dried up or something. It's not like he went and bought a yacht.
No, and it's not like he like took pension money out of people's retirement funds or anything.
You know?
Like obviously skimming off the top, still illegal, but
right.
When you talk about quote unquote like victimless crimes, like it doesn't seem like anyone other than
the government. I mean,
the government, right?
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens, but this is sort of like a developing thing. They're supposed to announce the verdict early next month, and then we'll see what happens. I'm really curious to see how this will affect UFO Table as a whole. Like I said, they're the Demon Slayer studio, but they're also the Fate studio. And what are some of their other really big works, Jane? I mean, they're known for their really great animation.
Fate, Demon Slayer, there's that. The last time we talked about this is that one other like gacha game that they did where it was like a bunch of pretty sword boys, and I always forget the name of it.
Token Rambu. Okay, yes.
Yeah. I actually did remember it. I was like, it's not Token Rambu, but it was. I remember that one.
I don't think they did the Hanamaru. I think they only did the other one. But I guess we'll just have to see how that turns out. So let's get down to anime. And not just anime news. I was going to talk about Blue Period first. James, I know you watched the first episode of this. Mm-hmm. Can you tell, were you able to get to any of the other episodes? I just kind of want to know like where you are at.
No, so I'm still on that first episode, and my impressions of the show are more or less kind of where they left off when we were doing Preview Guide, where I think I was maybe one of the only people, if I recall, that wasn't super taken by like the premiere in general, not just by main character guy's really kind of douchey attitude, but I also thought that the arc, it wasn't really doing a whole lot for me.
The animation itself can be a little iffy at times, which is really hard for a show that is specifically about art, because sometimes the character models look a little flat, like in the face, like, you know, you see the shading there on his nose, which helps give like some depth to the idea that he's got a nose bridge. Not always, like, that's not always there. Same with some of the eye shading sometimes goes away. So the characters can start looking flat depending on certain things. This is currently airing on Netflix. Like I said earlier, they're at episode 5. I feel like the plot's pretty easy, quick to sum up. This is the main character. His name's Yatora. And he is a really good student in his high school because he studies really, really hard. But he also kind of hangs out with a sort of delinquent style crowd. They're not like getting in legal trouble or like vandalizing stuff, but they smoke cigarettes and they stay out late and they do karaoke and stuff. And they don't really
take real bros. Things. Like they're like prototypical bros.
Prototypical bros. And he's very bro as well. He becomes interested in art after his high school just sort of has like a general contest. And he realizes that that's what he wants to pursue for college, but because he doesn't come from a wealthy family, there's really only one public university that has a good art program, and the acceptance rate is really low, and this is a shonen manga, so, I mean, it's going to kind of follow that formula a little bit. So he starts getting involved in the art club at his high school and actually gets into a prep school to start studying art more seriously. This is, I guess you could say she's the secondary protagonist. Her name is Yuka, and this is sort of where...
is she non-binary? Is she transgender? Is that really a distinction that's
They get into it a little more in one of the more current episodes. So I guess for some context, Yuka, she goes by Yuka. She wears a school uniform, dresses effeminate, is attracted to men. They have not at any point actually said that she is trans. She doesn't really go back and forth. They started using feminine pronouns for her in the subtitles. Okay. Yatora is kind of an asshole and only refers to her by her previous name, the masculine one. So, and she doesn't really correct him or get angry with him about it. So that's maybe where some of the like grayer area of it is. But there's an episode where Yatora goes to the museum with two other kids from his prep class and encounters Yuka there, and she's crying because she had asked a guy out on a date, I think either earlier in the episode or the episode prior. They went on the date. He assumed Yuka was cis female. And after the date, she told him that she's not. And she's crying because he basically said, well, you know, I'm straight, so I hope you understand. And so she has a conversation with Yatora about it. And that's the closest they come to really describing her feelings about her identity. The way that that episode plays out to me, now I'm not a trans person or a non-binary person, so this is just like my interpretation based on what I watched, but it sounded to me like a more like a trans narrative. She described not wanting to be confined by the rules because Yatora tells her that she'd be popular if she dressed like a boy because she has a pretty face. Maybe kind of thinking she could go like the sort of more like J-pop, K-pop look and would be really popular. But she says, you know, what's wrong with wanting to be pretty? What's wrong with wanting to be cute? What's wrong with a man being attracted to another man? So that's the part that's kind of iffy because she still talks about herself sometimes as, and he refers to her as a cross-dresser in the subtitles, and she seems to accept that. So it seems like in context, perhaps a gay man that cross-dresses, but not in like a, but it's not in like a drag culture sense, or anything like that. You know, she's dressed like this all the time. And in the most recent episode, it shows that her grandma even calls her Yuka. Her father doesn't, and Yatora doesn't, but the people who care about her refer to her as Yuka. So I could see very easily her character being interpreted as trans, but that's not the term, that terminology hasn't specifically been used. So
yeah, it's always hard because, you know, again, I'm not non-binary, nor am I trans or anything like that. And so, you know, my exposure to, I guess, like the current sort of cultural dialogue and the current norms that are being established are always from like the outside perspective. And I think it becomes doubly hard because, you know, not being involved in the discussions that are happening, like in Japan, I don't know if there's like a difference. Like, I don't even like using this term, but I don't know like what the woke levels would be in Japan, like versus here, like in the West. Like, I don't know if this would be considered like really progressive by even, you know, non-binary people and trans people in Japan, or if it would still be considered, like you said, maybe like a little imprecise in a way that maybe muddies the waters. But I do appreciate, it does sound like that the show is continuing to make sure to emphasize that the people that are supporting her identity and supporting her pronouns are the ones that are like, they're in the right. Like, the show is not advocating for, you know, dead naming or anything like that, which is,
I think the show has a lot of empathy for her in general, which helps me at least kind of overlook the imprecision of it. It is hard to kind of hone in on the intention because there's a language barrier there. There's a cultural barrier there that both of us have as far as, you know, when we're watching this media. I don't know the creator's background as far as like how much they know about LGBT plus identities and orientations and things like that. But, you know, the fact that this is running in a mainstream magazine for general audiences, I think it could still do a lot of good of that way, especially because it's, like I said, showing empathy for the character. I just kind of wish that maybe Yatora would, I don't know, like,
get a clue, man.
Yeah. bro. One of the other characters that shows up in this that's kind of interesting is, I think his name is Yatosuke. It was not a very common name. And we find out, you know, he's very much like a troubled artist kind of type, where he's very set in like being true to his vision, and he's not going to do anything that he has to get into art school that would compromise what he thinks is good artistic work. But on the other hand, like, he's talented. He's considered very talented, but he strikes me as one of those kids that has always been told that and has never had to compromise anything.
Yeah.
He's kind of a little shit, but very true to art school life. I definitely knew plenty of kids who were like really wrapped up in their art. I went to an art like junior high school combo for a couple years. It was like a magnet program, so it was a public school, but you had to do all these applications and stuff to get in.
Yeah.
And so we were all a bunch of weirdos, and I think I've told this story before, but that included, like, you know, some people did oil paintings, and you always listed the like what was used in the medium for whatever your art piece was. And I remember, like, one student had like blood on there because they had put their own blood in it or something. Yeah. Right. So there was a lot of stuff like that. Or, you know, you were learning about all these fine artists all the time. So you wanted to be clever and make your references to so-and-so's work, so it would be acknowledged. One year we studied Stanley Kubrick, like, cause we had a film section as well. So I got to watch 2001 A Space Odyssey, like, in school, which was pretty neat.
Great movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got a literature degree, and I feel like very similar vibes at my school, where, you know, we all went through our phase where we wanted to be like an avant-garde, like,
yes,
you know, abstract, surreal, boundary breaking, you know, mm-hmm. everyone wanted to write like the next House of Leaves or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Nothing could just be like normal. You couldn't just do a still life. Like, you had to do a still life, but then you had to like slash it with an X-Acto knife at the same time. And that was representative of everything had meaning all the time.
This is a still life from my own beating heart.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's very much it.
When
like,
you're a kid, that makes a lot, you know, you want to be a boundary pusher. And,
yes,
you know, we always get all these narratives of like how all the great artists like made their first masterpiece by the time they were 12. And so everyone was always in a rush to do the same thing. And, you know, sometimes it's good to just do your thing and be happy with it and not like worry about impressing people.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll learn that.
Hopefully. Yeah. So a lot of it so far is Yatora trying to figure out what his art is. What's the difference between just being like doing impressions of other famous work? What makes a good composition? How important like your own emotion needs to be while you're creating it. It has a lot of interesting things to say about the creation of art and like learning art. It's just also, you know, emotional drama sorts of thing. I think it's worth watching. I just hope the production, it can at least maintain the level that it's currently at, because it has had some visual struggles. So
one thing I was going to ask you is, given that this is one of the first shows to be free or kind of free, there was a slight delay, right? Between the Japanese.
Yeah, I think like a couple, like 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
2 to 3 weeks. Yeah.
Would you say that this is a show? Because I think something we've discovered with the rise of Netflix, but then Disney Plus, and now a lot of shows are going back to a weekly streaming model. And there's this constant debate about like which is better. And of course, the answer is, you know, neither. But I'm wondering, do you think that this is an anime that benefits from having like that kind of weekly release? Or is it a story that you think might have actually been more enjoyable if you were able to binge it?
I think it's better weekly for this one in particular, because it does kind of do like drama cliffhangers and things like that. And I think if it had dropped all at once, like the emotional resonance and the issues that the characters are going through, as well as like the passage of time, because it does cover a lot of the school year in a short period of time, I think it would have all felt really too quick. I mean, I watched 3 episodes back today, and that's like my preferred. I don't really like to do more than 3 at once if I'm gonna do quite a few at once.
I agree.
Just because otherwise you start losing threads like as you rush through it. And I think something with character drama like this is almost better when you have to like stop and think about it a little bit more, especially with how they're teaching you about art and how to think about art. It would be a lot to take in at once, I think. Otherwise, stuff like a Gretzko is stuff where I feel like you can binge it, though, where it's more of like a comedy model. Yeah. Unless the jokes are flat, like, if they repeat a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, right. If you only got like 20 minutes a week and that was the episode where like only 10% of the jokes hit, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like comedies and action series are the ones that really benefit from the binge model because you can just keep up the momentum of the humor and the violence. But whenever there's like heavy themes, I think that extra week does help.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. Speaking of heavy themes, time to talk about our best boy. So we're going to talk about Ranking of Kings. This is episode 4. And there will be spoilers during this. So if you have not yet watched Ranking of Kings episode 4, I don't know, like...
Why not? What are you doing with your life?
Yeah, stop the one show you should go be watching. Watch that. Because there'll be spoilers for this episode. We won't have spoilers for like later in the series. The manga's not available in English, and I don't pirate manga, so I don't have any clue what's happening after this. Also, they've been rearranging a lot of the content anyway, so even if you've read the manga, you probably wouldn't know exactly how things are going to play out. But yeah, Boji, Domas, and the knight there on the left with the kind of blonde coif, I guess I'll call it.
Oh, that's his name's like, isn't it like Kokoro or Kokoro?
Which is, if I'm recalling correctly, actually the Japanese word for owl. I don't know, maybe his cape kind of makes him sort of look like an owl guy. I don't know.
He has some kind of owl vibes. I can, okay.
Yeah, he's a good guy too. He's a good boy. So yeah, we're going to have lots of thoughts about this. So much happens in like the 25 minutes of each one of these episodes. It's kind of insane.
How is the show like the Game of Thrones of anime, and it's about this precious treasure? Like, I don't understand,
what studio has been pulling it off every single week so far? You know, we're the first month in. They keep me on my toes every single time, but I'm worried I'm going to be have written like a short novel by the time we get out of this, because for this episode alone, it was like I wrote like 1500 words, and that was just so I could cover like everything that happened and the implications of it and the references in it, because he's making lots of references to popular fairy tales or myths. There's a reference to Pandora's box at the end of this. It was really good. We're getting, you know, kind of flashing side by side stuff with what's going on with Daida while he's back in the kingdom, and what's going on there while he's being a little tyrant asshole. God damn it. And
shit boy.
And then we have, you know, Boji on his adventure here, and a lot, they cover a lot of ground on it. Now, James, I'm going to let you kind of sum it up because I've already done it. So go ahead.
I should be able to do this because I watched it just like an hour ago. So Boji is on his journey, his little journey to meet with the queen's parents and deliver a message. And his journey has its ups and its downs. He goes to, did they name the village that they went to, the city? They might have.
You're talking
about
the
first one. They go to a city.
Yeah.
He sees a puppet festival. His bag goes missing. Then it comes back, which didn't really get like addressed. And so I'm not sure. I don't know if that was maybe hinting at like the twist that happens later.
I have a theory, but I'll wait till you're done to share it.
I had a theory too. But they go traipsing through the woods. Boji gets yelled at, which is horrible. made me cry. Boji almost gets impaled on punchy sticks? Isn't that what they're called?
Oh yeah, yeah. I forget what the official word for those is, but yes.
And then he meets this dude.
Yeah.
This insane forest king man. And they dance and they frolic, and the king threatens to eat him. Kind of?
Possibly. Sacrifice him? You're kind of skimming over the weird part where they kill a boar and then a giant weird cloud thing appears in the air and sucks up all the spirits and then spits animals back into the forest.
I'm getting so used to the show's like bonkers world building that when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. That makes sense.
Came
out of his dad's corpse last week. Now there's this thing. All right. I guess that's fine. Yeah. Or like how the king ranker has the most ridiculous outfit imaginable. Yeah.
It's like, but it's intimidating in a way too. I'm like, that guy, I don't trust that guy. He's just scary.
He's like a scary jester judge thing.
Yeah.
So weird. But again, I just watch it and I go, all right, yeah, this is normal, I guess. That's how you rank kings. But yeah, so there is
the column, and however well they do, rank, right?
And so, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's implied that this guy here, they mentioned earlier that the kings that win the ranking of kings, by the by, they get to pick a treasure out of the super important vault of amazing holy treasures, but also they kind of go insane and disappear and or die.
Yeah.
And this seems like maybe one of the ones that went insane and disappeared into the woods to eat boars and mess with forest spirits and potentially
do ceremonial dances.
Yeah. Threaten children.
Threaten children. Yeah. 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 His eyes just, I mean, he's got crazy eyes to start with. Like, look at that guy.
Well, and I don't know about you, but the animation, especially during that dance sequence, it was giving me like, this is going to sound funny, it was giving me like Ed, Edd n Eddy vibes.
Oh, really?
Like there's just something about the way they were, and I think maybe it's because I'm not used to such kind of squash and stretch character animation in anime.
Yeah.
Like usually, you know, artists are trying to stay on model like as much as possible. And the way that this show has been perfectly happy to play with the characters, you know, bodies and physicalities in order to like make the movement as expressive as possible. It reminded me just of like Western cartoons in a way that you don't really see in a lot of modern anime.
Yeah.
You saw it a lot more back
in the like, stretch and then, yeah.
So great stuff. And then, I'm sorry, I'm trying not to like skip ahead too much to the ultimate betrayal, but Boji is
almost the desert part.
Yeah, the desert part. Boji is almost killed when he's eating a giant ham hock or a giant mutton chop, and Domas makes it seem as if it's Beben, the guy who we saw get impaled last week,
and absorbed into the earth,
potentially by snakes. Yeah,
or maybe something. By snakes. Yeah,
and
this show,
and the little shuriken that go into the not the shuriken, but you know what I mean, the little darts.
Yeah,
Kokoro thinks that they were poisoned, and that's why the foxes that ate Boji's ham hock died. But really,
that was really sad. By the way,
it was sad, but also it was a clue.
Yeah,
it was a clue because this whole episode, and it doesn't, it's not very subtle. So I can't say I was shocked when the ending happened, but I was. Mm-hmm. Hurt beyond all reconciliation, because the whole episode, while Boji's trying to do his little adventure and deliver this letter and prove himself to his teacher and his mother and all the other people that have doubted him, this whole time Domas is just sitting there in the corner being like, so Kokoro, would you follow any order you were given, no matter what it was? Kokoro's like, I don't know, man, that's kind of like an ominous and weird question to ask out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And Boji goes, that's why you're weak. Not Boji, Domas goes, that's why you're weak. And then earlier, Boji in the little village where his bag got stolen and then returned to him, he saw a Pacho about a terrible betrayal. And then there was also a line about the assassination of the prince is underway. Dida, like everything is going as planned.
It's like, oh, right. I missed the foreshadowing of the puppet show. I missed that. Yeah, I watched the episode twice. I didn't catch that. That's good.
Yeah, and it's just the whole episode is trying to make you think that there are people in the shadows hunting down our sweet, sweet boy. But no, it turns out that it's Domas.
Son of a bitch!
He pushes our boy into a freaking volcano!
They go to a place literally called the Gateway of Hell, and then he kicks him
a fine
into
place to take a boy.
Hell. Domas!
I hate him.
And he's all like, I'm horribly conflicted about this. And so you feel, you know, some for him. And it's like, he's such a goddamn traditionalist.
He's dead to me. No coming back from that.
I know. So the whole idea is that.
Oh, and I guess maybe Dida has to like, he has to do something weird with his dad's body to get his dad's strength. Does it explain what specifically he needs to do?
No, but I have a theory about that as well.
Okay.
So looking at all the content in this, so Domas, he kicks Boji into hell. Because he was ordered to by Dida. And Dida's mom apparently doesn't know that she has somehow raised a tiny tyrant piece of shit. He's being manipulated.
Does she? I don't even trust her anymore. Does she know? Is she in on it?
I don't know, because Dinah's being manipulated by an entity in a magic mirror, right? And we don't know, like, when he got the mirror. We do know, like, I think Bebin and Domas, or at least Domas, was aware that the mirror existed and possibly has an entity in it, right? Because they, like, acknowledge, like, when he says he wants to be the number one king in the ranking, I think it's Domas who thinks, like, that mirror's influence or something like that. And it's like,
wait. Okay, I know Bebin knew. And
okay, maybe it was Bebin. I might be mistaking who, like, had that thought, but one of them did. So at least one of them was aware that, like, he's got this creepy-ass mirror, like, telling him what he needs to do to be a good king. And the mirror has advised him, well, you need to have your brother assassinated because he's going to start a coup. Like, there could be a coup. People decide that you're not really worthy of the throne and that he's the correct heir. There could be a coup, so you need to kill him. And that's also why you needed to have Apis, who was the spear wielder who killed or stabbed, impaled Bebin in the earlier episode. It's the same reason why he was probably trying to get rid of him. But yeah, so Domas thinks if the king gives you an order, even if that king is like a 13-year-old piece of shit, you need to do it. So he kicks our precious boy into a flaming pit of hell. Now, I don't know this for sure, but here's my theory on how he will survive this. And also it accounts for, well, this isn't, I shouldn't say my theory. Someone proposed this in the forums and I think it's really smart. That a lot of the shadowy incidents were actually the result of Kage, who we haven't seen at all in this episode because Bebin told him to get lost and he did. But I think when Bebin told him to get lost in the previous episode, I mean, he had been, like, torturing Kage a bit. But then when Kage, like, proved his loyalty to Boji, it kind of seemed like Bebin was like, all right, well, you need to get out of here and go on a journey or something. So yeah, I also kind of
question something about, like, a mission or, like, a something. Yeah.
Yeah, so that also makes me question Bebin's loyalty to Dida, which would make sense because I thought Bebin actually had some pretty positive comments for Boji during his duel when he was using that fighting style that everyone was saying was, like, not king-like. He did that. And so I also wonder, like, if he lost against Apis on purpose and maybe him and the snake, like, the snake absorbed him so he knew he was never going to die anyway, but it would give him, he could fake his death in that instance and then go over to Boji's side. There's all these sort of things that are happening. But Kage, anyway, he's been missing. Now, Boji goes to the town and he falls asleep after watching the puppet show. When you see him walk away from the puppet show, it's right after he's given the puppet guy a gold coin, right? And everyone's like, oh my God, this kid has all this money. There's a shadow, not shadowy, but there's a suspicious looking character at the puppet show. He's kind of like a tall dude. Complete, like, NPC background character. Like, no one you would recognize. But he, like, his gaze, like, follows Boji as he leaves. I'm pretty sure he's the one who picked his pocket. But I'm pretty sure Kage stole his purse back and then left it on the road for him to find. And that's why he was able to find his purse later with everything still inside it. And then the rest of the theory is that in the desert, it wasn't the shuriken things that were poisoned. It was the meat itself.
That one I figured because they did that really ominous, like, when all the foxes were dead and Kokuro was like, I think the darts must have been poisoned. It just, like, zoomed in on Domas's face. And again, the whole episode, I was like, something's up with you, man. And then it's like,
that would have made sense minute. That, like, he poisoned him in the night. Like, he was going to eat it and he was just going to die in his sleep. And I think that's probably how Domas originally intended to kill him.
Well, because my thought was, if there's something up with Domas, and at that point I was, like, convinced because that weird conversation with
the restaurant,
I was like, okay, yeah, like, you're up to something, man. But then when the shuriken thing happened, I was like, well, wait a minute. If Domas is up to something, why would he care if someone, like, threw a bunch of shurikens at Boji? Because that would just, like, you know, take care of the thing already. Yeah, but then I was like, well, wait a minute, the shurikens hit the meat. And then... Yeah. And I was like, huh,
maybe it foiled his poisoning plan. And he's thinking Bebin is foiling his poisoning plan. But I think maybe it is Bebin, but it could also be Kage, I guess, is what I'm saying there. There's also a scene when he falls in that pit with the Forest King. He falls down there. Something throws a rock at him, and it hits him in the head, and that directs him to look towards the opening in the wall.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was about. I noticed that, and I kind of forgot that that happened until you just mentioned it. But when that happened, I was like, wait, what the heck?
Yeah, because it wasn't like a rock that, like... Yeah, it wasn't. Didn't seem like it slipped off a wall, and, like, hit him in the back of the head. It, like, the trajectory of it was as if someone threw it at him and hit him with it.
And I'm also just remembering that those same darts, the knives. I know the name for them, and it's gonna drive the kunai,
right? Yes. Yeah.
Hey, thank you, Naruto. The kunai. I think the first time we saw those was when Kage used them to escape from Beben when he first got captured. He threw it like through Beben's
hand. I knew we'd seen them before, and I couldn't remember if Kage used them or his mother used them when she was trying to get them out. But I was like, I've seen those used before. So yeah,
we know our boar can throw kunai.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely think there's someone is in the shadows helping Boji, and whether it's Beben or Kage, I think they'll probably help him out of this fire pit situation and reveal themselves in the upcoming episode. But yeah, just so much to chew on. Okay, so you also brought up that Daida has that dream with the Pandora's box, where Boji represents hope and everything. I thought that was really clever how they did all that. And
it seems like Daida's like genuinely like concerned about his brother. Like there's a part of him at least that does love Boji and doesn't want to see him get hurt.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
But then in the dream, they're talking about how they're basically saying Boji's a good leader because he never gives up. His spirit like will protect the people because they'll believe in him because they know that he is indefeatable. Even if he is physically like weaker, he won't lose ground that way. And so Daida wakes up from that dream and he's like, no, I can't let Boji be that. I got to go get dad's power because I sucked at the ranking when I tried to do it myself. So I got to go.
90th place, bitch. That's what happens. That's what happens.
That's I'm what sorry. Happens when I you're just... a little twerp king. And like,
you know. And watch, the show is going to do the same thing it did with the mom, where we're going to find out that he also secretly has maybe some like complicated and nuanced motivations that make him a really well-written and interesting character. And then I'm going to have to stop hating him so much.
Have to re-evaluate.
Redirected all to Domas, the little twerp, the big twerp. He doesn't have any excuse. He's a grown ass man. He could have not pushed Boji into the gate of hell easily.
So
that was a choice.
It was. So what I'm thinking that the power that Daida is going to go after is related to that demon, because I'm assuming that there was some sort of like contract with the devil sort of thing going on between King Boss and the devil to get him as strong as he was. And they say in the episode that if you based him purely on strength ability, Boss was the most powerful king. But that kind of implies he wasn't actually ranked as number one. Someone ranked above him, but he had the highest like physical prowess. So I assume that Daida is going to attempt something like that. And that demon thing like is pretty iffy in general. Like when it came out of his dad's body, like pointed at Boji and laughed.
He was so trustworthy.
Definitely like the first person I'd talk to if I was having, you know, like problems running a country is that creepy, hairy, heart-faced demon thing, right? But
the demon already pointed out Boji, so like what's going on?
I know, so
how is the show so good?
Yeah, I know. I still have like tons of questions. There's still mysteries to keep you like interested in what's going to happen next, but there's always like a ton of stuff happening every single episode to also keep you really intrigued. So yeah,
really quick,
Boji's definitely gonna live, but then what's gonna happen to Domas? Like,
well, I was gonna say we didn't even talk about the wonderful and perfect and amazing scene where we learned that the reason Kokoro respects Boji so much is because when his mother died, Boji like reached out and empathized with him, and it's just like.
And then you see little Boji like, nuzzling his mom's tomb, and then you just die inside a little bit, and you're like, oh no, can I adopt?
We flash back to when Domas like learned sign language for Boji, and Boji like tried to speak for him, and it's like, you monster, you betrayed that.
I can't. God, that was so hard. I mean, in fairness to the team behind this, I mean, Domas immediately has a breakdown after he thinks he's killed him. And it was pretty well done. You know,
when he started doing the evil anime laugh, I was a little worried because it's like, oh, yeah. don't do that.
But it was like a mental stress break. It was like a stress break. He starts laughing and then he just starts like sobbing, like his whole body's heaving. And I'm thinking, like, how are you going to explain this to Hokuro? You told him to go find somewhere for you guys to sleep. Like, the poison thing, you could have played off somehow, like a snake or something. I don't know, but like...
Yeah, sorry, I lost him. I don't know.
Lost him? He just fell in? Like, I don't... Are you going to go back to the kingdom and tell Queen Healing that? Like, as far as we know, like, she is not in any way expecting him to die. Gonna tell her that her son ordered it? Like, Daida's an idiot, so he probably didn't think any of this through, but like, pretty sure even when you become king, you can't just kill your brother without any reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder what like the due process for that would be. How do you put the king on trial? In this world of demons and clown judges and weird clown judges.
Yeah. So I don't know, but maybe it'll be good also. This will give, when he's inevitably rescued, Boji will have broken away from the kingdom entirely at this point, so he can continue his adventure in whatever direction he wants, because everyone's going to think he's dead.
I am living for the moment where Domas has to look in that boy's eyes and reckon with what he's done. And Boji, of course, is probably going to like forgive him or something. And Domas is going to break down weeping, and I'm going to relish every single one of those tears. I will. I can admit that.
I would like to see Boji. I mean, he's still young, but I think it would actually do him a little bit of good to develop some kind of sense of righteous anger.
Yeah, get mad.
Get mad.
When people push you into hell volcanoes, you should get a little mad.
Just a little bit.
It's a good life lesson.
Yeah. Okay, so the last thing we wanted to talk about today before we're done is what is going on with Demon Slayer, James? How is Demon Slayer train doing?
It is chugging right along. Let's see if I can figure out this screen share right here. So it is... Wait for it. There we go. Okay, so we have right here, it's going fine. It's going just fine.
You picked this moment over everything. So this is when he's in his like nightmare world thing. He's asleep, right? Because
it's a little weird. So at the end of last week, Tanjiro got that sort of vision from like his dream dad that said like, you know, take up your sword. There's something you have to cut, and conclusion that he came to is that I have to cut my own throat to wake up from this dream.
Which, I remember this, okay. Yeah.
And so we come back to that, and that does actually work. That wakes him up. He wakes up, and Nezuko is there taking care of the ropes that were tying him to the one kid with, I guess, tuberculosis that was hanging out in his dreams. And it was kind of funny that in his dreams, even Tanjiro's like, dream sprites are so overwhelmingly kind that like the little villain kid is like, and I was gonna kill you. I'm so terrible. I've learned the error of my ways.
Your goodness has guilted me. That's
what he does. So he wakes up and he very quickly kind of susses out the gist of what's going on, knocks out the kids. Inosuke and Zenitsu are still asleep. Flamio, what's his name? Flamio, that guy. Oh my goodness. Flame Hashira. I can't remember his freaking
Rengoku.
Yeah, Rengoku. Yeah. Which just goes to show the impression that he's made upon me as a character. Yeah. They're all still asleep. So Zenitsu goes up to the train and meets Train Demon. I don't think he has a name yet. I don't think we've been given a name. I've been on the lookout for one because I feel bad for just calling him Train Demon every week, but that's what we got.
Right. Yeah.
And as he's fighting Train Demon, And Train Demon is like doing the thing where he rants about dreams and murder and, you know, doing his evil demon laugh. He kind of like puts flashes of this in Tanjiro's head as he's like fighting, I think, to throw him off. It was a little unclear like how it was working. I wasn't even sure if Tanjiro was like seeing this or if this was something he was thinking. But then Tanjiro does say, like, how dare you insult my family? They'd never tell me that the wrong kid died. And so it's like a kind of like a battle vision thing.
If I remember right from the movie, when he's fighting him, the demon is repeatedly putting him back to sleep. Is that?
Oh, is that what was that? Okay, so
and I he's guess continually killing himself over and over and over again to wake back up and keep fighting him. So it's like he like puts him to sleep. He sees his family or something, and then he like cuts his own throat, wakes back up, and he's just like repeatedly. It was really kind of dark. Repeatedly committing suicide over and over again to break the spell so he could keep fighting him.
Because I'm recalling where like he gets like knocked back and he's like staggering and his eyes go white. I don't recall.
Now, granted, every time his eyes go white, he's putting him back to sleep again.
So that I'm remembering. I don't recall him like repeatedly having to cut his own throat in the show. Now, granted, I watched this yesterday, and in these days that means that was a year ago,
right?
So that makes more sense. That's good. In the middle of that fight is when he's basically breaking through that vision and understanding that his family would never do that, and then he cuts off the demon guy's head. But of course, unfortunately for Tanjiro and I guess everyone else on the train, it turns out that cutting off the demon's head doesn't actually do much, because he's not actually the demon anymore. He's the train. He is the train demon.
I want to put this on my gravestone.
I mean, it's a good burn, right? It's like it's a good, you know, it's like a good.
You moment. Cut off my head. Now what? Do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cut the head off this train, punk. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going. What was that?
Oh, I forgot that he is the whole train. I forgot that. Yeah.
Or like his organs are all like smushed up in the train. So I figure it's the same thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's going okay. I think that I'm coming to the conclusion that maybe splitting this up into weekly episodes was not the best idea.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the pacing of this particular arc actually lends itself to episodic storytelling because it's kind of doing that thing where it feels like it's starting in the middle of a scene and then ending in the middle of a scene.
Oh, okay.
And I know we talked before about how shonen manga just kind of does that in general because of the way that you're adapting like chunks of chapters. But there's something about, like, I think the fact that like this is the first time that Tanjiro and Train Guy have really met and that our heroes kind of understand what the conflict is. And it's been like a month since the season started. And so I think that's been my struggle, is that right when things get interesting and Train Demon turns into this freaky ass worm thing, cut to credits and I got to wait another week to like actually see what this is built into. So
how does the CG look to you? Cause I was actually kind of iffy on the, like the worm CG when I saw it in theaters.
It's weird because the studio is doing that thing that I seem to recall they did a little bit of when I watched the Heaven's Feel movie 10,000 years ago before the pandemic, and where the train model, like the CG they're using for the train, has like a very specific kind of texture and shading to it where it looks pretty good when combined with like the whatever, either 2D or 3D models they're using for like the moon and the trees and stuff that are whipping by. And so when the 2D models of the characters are composited against like specifically the train, I've thought it's looked pretty good. But then the way they're doing the goopy worm body, it looks like a different style of CG to where if it were like all like a regular 2D background and the goopy worm body was like the only CG thing, it might stick out a little less. But because you have like almost like three different art styles happening at the same time, it kind of looks like here where it looks like they just photoshopped his head on top of a different art asset.
Yeah.
And it's not horrible. It didn't really draw me out of it, but it didn't. Okay. I didn't think it was like amazing looking. I thought it was an idea that was a lot cooler, like him becoming the train. I thought like the fact that it was just a bunch of sort of nondescript CG goop was a little less exciting than what I would have maybe imagined if you told me that his body had fused with the train. Like when I was describing it to my wife, she was saying, oh, does that mean like his lungs are like spread apart in one cart and his spine is another? No, it's mostly just goop.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of the goop from Power Rangers, the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, what's the fart cloud from the Green Lantern movie?
I never watched that.
Oh, with yeah, man. Not Sinestro. Is it Sinestro? I don't know. The yellow fart cloud that Ryan Reynolds has to fight. It kind of looks like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I also wondered like if it looked any different. When I saw it in theaters, it stuck out to me a little bit. I was like, I've seen a lot worse for sure, but it was still a little like not quite as well integrated as I would have liked. And I'd wondered, because they do have some new footage, I think, in the TV series. It's not just a straight cut of the film. So there is, like, I'm sure it's not extensive, but I'd wondered if maybe they tweaked it a little bit and might have looked better. But based on the screenshot, I think it still kind of looks like how I saw it in theaters. So ooze in Power Rangers, not goop. I'm sorry, you're right. It is ooze. It is also purple.
That's right.
Ivan Ooze.
Ooze Daddy.
Does he drop that line in there?
No, but he should.
He should, yeah.
He would if that movie was made in 2021.
He would. So if he's at this part, how many episodes are we into this? Like how many?
Four.
Are left?
So I think there's only three left.
Okay. So you've got three left before we get to Entertainment District arc. So, and then it's all new shit.
Yeah. I think it's good. I don't think it's Demon Slayer at its best. Mm-hmm. There's even one part where, I can't remember if it was this week or last week, but I think it was this week where when he kills Train Guy, like super easy. To his credit, Tanjiro actually like realizes that was really easy. There's no way I killed him just with one sword stroke. Like that was way too easy. Yeah. But one of his thoughts is like, is it that he's just like not as strong as Spider Demon that I just fought? Which I thought was kind of funny because like, you know, traditionally your villains escalate in power. But right. It also reminded me of how much more I liked the Spider Clan as villains.
Yeah, they were
good.
It was
one of those things where I was like, don't remind me of a more interesting set of villains when you're still introducing this villain.
Yeah.
I don't know
his name. You need to sell me on this train guy right now.
Yeah.
Not remind me of spiders. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week. Thank you again, James, for coming in. I think next week we'll also be doing a ranking of Kings again and checking in on Demon Slayer. If there's another show that you'd like us to feature, you know, drop it in the comments. We'll consider it. There's, like I said, this is a really good season, so there's a lot of things to sample.
Just don't say Fruit of Evolution, or I will personally.
How is Fruit of Evolution, James? How are you doing?
It's just really bad at everything it tries to do. It's just really. Truly terrible at everything.
Everything.
At everything. Yeah. I don't think it does a single thing right, actually. Which is I'm not even being hyperbolic. I genuinely think every single thing it could be bad at, it is bad at. So
well, that's something in and of itself, isn't it?
It's impressive. So, it kind of takes effort, really.
Yeah.
You kind of have to go out of your we have to make choices to be that bad. You can't just be lazy. Like you have to like really commit. So I guess I can't. I have to respect that a little bit. I don't.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I should.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
It
thanks,
knows
everybody.
What it is.
It knows what it is. Yeah. And it's found its audience and they're in the ANN forum comments. So.
More all power right. to you guys.
Yeah.
More power to you.
Like what you like. We're not here to shame you, even if it's trash. I want to thank everyone for tuning into the show. We will be back next week on Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you have not already, make sure to subscribe to our channel. We've got new videos coming up every Friday, new editorial videos, and of course the show, as well as interviews, trailers, and like. head over to animenewsnetwork.com to get all your anime news coverage and see why all of our staff is right all the time.
Forever.
I'm just kidding. A little bit. All right. See you guys next time. James, not. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.